said Tiffany. How many trumpeters does it take to change a light bulb? Said Clementine.
How many?
Five. One to change it, and four to stand around and say, I could do it better.
How many electricians does it take to change a light bulb? Said Vid.
How many?
One, said Vid.
One?
Yeah, one, said Vid.
He shrugged.
I'm an electrician.
Clementine laughed. That's not funny.
But you're laughing, you know?
Anyway, listen, Clementine, you be the judge, said Vid. He dug a spoon into the decadent dessert and held it close to Clementine's mouth.
Try it.
She took a mouthful.
It was good.
The man cooked like a dream. Clementine pretended to swoon, her hand against her forehead. She let herself fall against his arm, and he steadied her. Vid smelled deliciously of cigarette smoke and alcohol. He smelled like an expensive bar.
Jesus, this lid is on tight, said Sam with gritted teeth,
the jar of nuts under one arm like a football.
Come on, muscles, said Tiffany.
Listen, said Vid, his head on one side as the second movement began.
You can't exactly dance to this, though, can you? Said Tiffany.
Clementine tried to imagine Tiffany dancing in some dark, smoky club, mirrored disco balls hanging from the ceiling. Where did she get that idea from? She'd never actually been in a strip club. All her knowledge came from TV shows. She looked around. Erica and Oliver weren't there to look disapproving. This was her chance to find out more. She was a tiny bit tipsy, she knew it, but this was fascinating, amusing, and she wanted some fun, lowbrow tidbits to share with her highbrow friends. She lowered her voice and leaned toward Tiffany.
Did you used to do, you know, what are they called?
She knew perfectly well what they were called.
Lap dances?
Tiffany looked back at her speculatively.
Sure, she said.
Why?
Do you want one?
Chapter 43. We can't find stuff because we keep too much stuff, said Sam. We need to have regular throwouts. We need to declutter. He went to Holly's chest of drawers, pulled out an entire drawer, dumped the contents on her bed, and picked up a t-shirt at random.
See? She never wears this. She says it's all scratchy.
This isn't helping me find her strawberry top, said Clementine, looking at the mound of clothes. It made her think of Erica's mother. You could almost understand how you could lose control of your possessions until it was just so overwhelming you didn't even know where to start.
This is just making a mess.
Sam tried to pull out another drawer, but it jammed. He pulled harder and swore. The chest of drawers rattled. There was something disturbing about seeing him there in his business pants but no shirt, pulling violently on the little white drawer. His jaw clenched, his muscles flexed.
For heaven's sake. Leave it, said Clementine. You're going to break it.
He ignored her and yanked again, and this time the drawer finally came free and he dumped another pile of clothes on the bed.
You know what I was doing?
He said suddenly, standing there with the empty drawer hanging from his hands.
Just before it happened?
Oh, God.
You were trying to open a jar of nuts,
said Clementine dully. She knew this. He told her this before. She didn't know why he kept bringing up the jar of nuts. It had nothing to do with anything.
I was so desperate to open that fucking jar, said Sam. I had beads of sweat popping on my forehead because I knew Vid would take it off me and he'd just open it with one twist of a meaty hand, and you couldn't take your eyes off him.
What? Said Clementine. This was new. Don't pretend you were doing it for me. It was for her. It was to impress Tiffany.
Yeah. And what were you doing? Tell me that. What were you doing?
He slammed the empty drawer on Holly's bed, stepped towards her, and loomed over her. She felt little flecks of spit land on her face.
Hit me, she thought.
She lifted her face. It would feel so right. It would begin something. It would end something. Please, please hit me. But he took a sudden step back, hands lifted, like a guy in a pub brawl making it clear he isn't getting involved.
We were all doing it, shouted Clementine. All four of us.
Chapter 44, The Day of the Barbecue.
Why? Do you want one?
Tiffany couldn't resist. These people were so freaking cute, so easily shockable.
A lap dance?
Clementine's eyes shone. Tiffany knew she was just drunk enough and, yes, vanilla enough to be the perfect target.
No.
Sure. A lap dance. Oh, God, Tiffany had forgotten how much she enjoyed this. It had been so long since she'd felt that rush of sexual power straight to the head, like a line of cocaine.
Do we get a discount? Said Sam.
No charge, said Tiffany.
On the house.
Enjoy my wife's lap dance, said Vid to Clementine.
He pulled out a chair.
I insist.
Oh, stop it, giggled Clementine. Anyway, the music is wrong. She can't do a lap dance to a cello concerto.
I could give it a shot, said Tiffany.
She had no intention of giving her next-door neighbor's friend a lap dance. It was a joke. It was all in good fun.
She is very adaptable, said Vid.
It's very kind of you, but I really don't want a lap dance, said Clementine. Thank you anyway.
Her voice sounded husky. She cleared her throat self-consciously.
I think you do, said Sam.
Sam, said Clementine.
Tiffany watched Sam and Clementine look at each other, their faces flushed, their pupils dilated. It would be a kindness, a public service. She could see exactly where their sex life was at. They were tired parents of young kids. They thought it was all over, and it wasn't. They didn't need an affair or a midlife crisis. It was all still in them. They were still attracted to each other. They just needed a little electric shock to the system, a little stimulus, maybe some sex toys, some good quality soft porn. She could be their good quality soft porn. Tiffany caught Vid's eye. He raised an eyebrow. He was loving this. Of course he was. He moved his chin just subtly. It meant, go on. Blow their nice little suburban minds. Sam stood behind Clementine and pushed her shoulders, so she sat. His eyes locked onto Tiffany's. He was her favourite sort of customer. Appreciative, friendly. He wasn't taking it too seriously, but he was taking it seriously enough. He'd tip generously and gratefully. He really wanted to see his wife get a lap dance. Of course he did. The man was only human. Tiffany looked at Clementine, who was so weak with laughter and desire. Tiffany knew it, even if Clementine didn't. She could barely sit up straight in her chair.
Tiffany wasn't going to do it, not properly, not in the backyard with kids around. But as a joke, for the fun of it, she moved slowly in time to the freaking concerto. Oh, yes, you can do a lap dance to a cello concerto, no problem at all. Almost in parody of herself. Except not quite, because she still had her professional pride, and she'd been one of the best in the business. It was never just about the money. It was about making a connection, a human connection, and playing it with just the right amount of theatricality, reality, poetry. Vid Wolf whistled. Clementine smacked her hand over her eyes and peeked between her fingers. There was a tremendous crash of crockery and an extraordinary scream that tore straight through the night. Clementine! Chapter 45. Hope you feel better soon, said the police officer, as Oliver stood at the front door to wave her and her partner off. Thank you, said Oliver, with maybe excessive gratitude, because the police officer flicked him a look as if she'd missed something. It was just that he was genuinely touched by her taking the time to comment upon his health. Did his gratitude seem suspicious? Guilty? He'd never been one of those people who felt guilty when they saw a police car drive by. His conscience was generally clear. Most people drove 10 kilometres over the speed limit, while he made a practice of driving 5 kilometres under. The police had been there following up on Harry's death. They were having trouble tracking down his next of kin. Oliver wished he could be more helpful. He admitted that his conversations with Harry had never crossed over into the personal. They'd chatted about the weather and the garden and that abandoned car in the street. He'd felt, rightly or wrongly, that Harry wouldn't have appreciated personal questions. The police wanted to confirm again when he had last seen Harry, and he was able to give them an exact date, the day before the barbecue. He said that Harry had seemed in good health. He didn't mention anything about Harry complaining about Vid's dog. It didn't seem relevant. He didn't want to paint Harry in a bad light. You seem very sure about that date, said the nice policewoman. Well, yes, said Oliver. It's because the day after that there was an incident. Next door. She raised her eyebrows, and he gave her the details, briefly, because, to his surprise, he found he got strangely breathless as he talked about it. The policewoman made no comment. Perhaps she already knew. There was a police report on file, after all. Of course, the police would see no connection, no cross-reference between Harry's death and the barbecue. But as Oliver closed the door and went back into the kitchen to boil the jug to make himself a hot lemon and honey drink, he found himself thinking of those 2 minutes. He estimated it had been about 2 minutes. 2 minutes of self-pity. 2 minutes that might have changed everything, because if he'd been out there, he would have seen what was going on. He reckoned there was a good chance he would have seen. Come on now, that was a stretch. Melodramatic. Putting himself centre stage. You're not responsible for the whole world, Oliver, his mother had once said to him in a moment of sobriety or drunkenness. It had always been hard to tell the difference. Oliver switched on the electric kettle. But it was not a stretch, because what had happened at the barbecue had crashed like a meteorite through their lives, and if he hadn't been so distracted, if life had continued in its normal, predictable way, surely he would have noticed much sooner that Harry hadn't been around, and he might have banged on his door weeks earlier. Harry would probably still be dead, but he wouldn't have been dead for quite so unforgivably, tragically long. Or he might have even saved him. The kettle bubbled and hissed, and Oliver remembered how he'd stood in that luxurious little bathroom at the back of the cabana, letting the hot water run and run pointlessly over his hands, while he stared at his own sad, stupid face. Chapter 46. The Day of the Barbecue. Oliver stood in the cabana bathroom, washing his hands. It was a fancy, soft-lit, scented bathroom. The light fitting was an imitation chandelier, all glittery glimmer. If his mother were here at this barbecue and at the nasty stage of her inexorable progress toward inebriation, she would whisper, "So tacky!" loudly in Oliver's ear. Loud enough that he'd be terrified someone would overhear. He let the water run needlessly over his hands. He was delaying the moment when he'd have to go back outside again. Frankly, he'd had enough. He liked everyone here well enough. It was just that socializing was a mental and physical effort that left him exhausted and drained, and it wasn't a good sort of tiredness, like when the lactic acid built up in his muscles after a solid workout. He heard laughing outside. Vid's big booming laugh. Oliver pasted a smile on his face in preparation, ready to share the joke. Ha ha ha. Good one. Whatever it was. He probably wouldn't really find it funny. Erica was drunk. He wanted to take Erica home and put her to bed like a child and wait for the morning when she would be his beloved wife again. He'd never seen her slur her words before or look at him with glassy, unfocused eyes. It was nothing to get himself worked up about. She wasn't falling over or dropping things or vomiting in the garden. It was just regular drunkenness. Some people did it every weekend. Clementine was a little merry, too. Hectic spots of colour on each cheek, but he didn't care what Clementine did. When he was a kid, it used to feel like his parents disappeared when they got drunk. As the levels of their glasses went down, he could sense them pulling away from him, as if they were together on the same boat, slowly pulling away from the shore where Oliver was left stranded, still himself. Still boring, sensible Oliver. And he'd think, please don't go, stay here with me. Because his real mother was funny, and his real father was smart. But they always went. First his dad got stupid, and his mum got giggly. And then his mum got nasty, and his dad got angry. And so it went, until there was no point staying. And Oliver went to his room to watch movies. He'd had his own VCR in his bedroom. He'd had a privileged upbringing. Had never wanted for anything. He met his own eyes in the mirror. Come on. Pull yourself together. Go back out. Today was not meant to have been the day when Erica got drunk for the first time in their marriage. Today was the day when they were meant to have put their proposal to Clementine, and Oliver had hoped. He knew it was unrealistic, but he had really hoped that she might. He heard Erica scream, "Clementine!" He didn't stop to turn off the tap. Chapter 47. The Day of the Barbecue. The air rushed from Clementine's lungs. Afterwards, everyone would say, it happened so fast, and it did happen fast, but at the same time, it slowed down, every second a freeze frame in unforgettable full colour lit by golden fairy lights. Clementine leapt to her feet so fast her chair fell over. What? Where? Who? Her first thought was that one of the girls had hurt themselves. Very badly. Blood. There would be blood. She couldn't stand blood. Maybe they'd need stitches.
Or a broken bone sticking out of the skin. Teeth, chipped teeth. Holly or Ruby? Probably Holly. The backyard spun around her in a whirl of colour. She couldn't hear crying. Where was the crying? They both had such loud cries. Holly was enraged when she hurt herself. Ruby wanted to ensure she communicated the need for an urgent parental response. She saw Holly first, standing in the gazebo with her little blue sequined bag, perfectly fine, looking impassively at... what? Erica running. She was looking at Erica running. Erica was running toward the fountain. Vid's Trevi Fountain. What was she doing? She looked like she was going to dive in. Erica had lost her mind. She was having a nervous breakdown, some sort of psychotic episode. Clementine knew she wasn't right tonight. She never got drunk, and she'd been behaving so strangely. It was Clementine's fault. Erica leapt up and over the side of the fountain in one swift, athletic move. She was waist deep in water. She slipped, almost fell, righted herself, and waded toward the middle. What in the world was she doing? Clementine was mortified for her. And now Oliver was running from the cabana toward the fountain to drag Erica away, to stop her embarrassing herself. He didn't even stop when he reached the side of the fountain. He crashed straight over the side. He and Erica waded, slipped and slid from opposite sides of the fountain together, like two lovers in a movie rushing to embrace after a long absence. But they didn't embrace. They lifted Ruby's tiny, lifeless body high up between them. Chapter 48, The Day of the Barbecue. Ruby's head sagged sideways. Water streamed from her. Her little pink coat was heavy and sodden with water. Her arms dangled uselessly like a rag doll's. Clementine thought, cold. She'll be so cold. Ruby hated the cold. Her teeth chattered like a wind-up toy when she got too cold. The water at swimming lessons was never warm enough for her, even in the middle of summer. Cold! Cold! She'd cry. Clementine ran to snatch Ruby from Oliver, to snuggle her close to her chest and warm her up. She could already feel how her wet body would soak her clothes. She got to the side of the fountain and held out her hands, but Oliver ignored Clementine as he climbed out of the fountain with Ruby cradled in his arms. Me, said Clementine stupidly. She meant, give her to me. Oliver placed Ruby flat on her back on the hard, uncomfortable terracotta tiles next to the fountain. Ruby, said Oliver loudly, as if Ruby were in trouble. He shook Ruby's little shoulder, much too roughly. Ruby! Wake up, Ruby! He sounded angry. He never sounded angry. Clementine fell hard on her knees on the tiles next to them. Give her to me, she said desperately, but she couldn't get close to her. Oliver and Erica were taking up the space. Ruby's skin was white. Her lips were violet. Her head lolled. Her eyes were open but stared straight ahead. Her teeth weren't chattering. Oliver put one hand under Ruby's neck and the other hand on her forehead and tipped back her head as if to stare at the sky. He put his thumb on her chin, pulled open her mouth, and then he stuck in two fingers as if he were trying to fish something out. Oliver, give her to me! Demanded Clementine. She just needed to get her into her arms so she could fix her. Oliver bent his head down close to Ruby's face and turned his ear to her mouth as if to listen to her whisper something. He looked at Erica and shook his head. A tiny shake that said, no. He unbuttoned the black toggles of her pink coat. Understanding exploded through Clementine's body at the same moment as the music stopped abruptly. There was a moment of complete eerie silence in the backyard before Sam began to shout as if he were in a violent argument with someone. "We need an ambulance!" He ran back and forth, idiotically, dementedly, patting his pockets. "I can't find my phone. Where's my phone? My phone!" Vid said calmly, "I'm calling an ambulance, Sam." He lifted his phone from his ear to prove it. "It's ringing. It's ringing right now." "Tell them she's not breathing," said Erica. She and Oliver were moving themselves into position side by side next to Ruby. "It's important they know she's not breathing."
"What's wrong with Ruby?" said Holly.
She came and stood next to Clementine and plucked at her sleeve. Clementine tried to answer, but her chest was so tightly constricted she couldn't speak.
"Does she want Whisk?" said Holly. "Here's Whisk. Mummy, quickly, give Ruby Whisk. That will make her feel better."
Clementine took Whisk. She curled her fingers around the cold wires. "Come here with me, Holly." Tiffany took Holly by the hand and pulled her back. Oliver said to Erica, 15 and 2, right?" His face was dead white. There were droplets of water on his glasses like rain and beads of water sliding down his face like sweat. His eyes were fixed on Erica as if they were the only two people there. "Yes, 15 and 2, said Erica. She pushed her wet hair out of her eyes. Oliver laced his fingers, locked his elbows, and put his big hands over Ruby's chest.
"Oh, God," said Sam.
He clutched his hands behind the back of his neck and dropped his head as if he were protecting himself from a blow and walked around in circles.
"Oh, dear God."
Oliver began to rock back and forth, counting out loud as he rhythmically compressed Ruby's chest. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5.
"Oliver is hurting Ruby," wailed Holly.
"No," said Tiffany, "he's not hurting her. He's helping her. He and Erica are doing exactly the right thing. They're helping her." Her voice trembled. 12 and 13 and 14 and 15. And 1 and 2. On the count of 15, Erica pinched Ruby's nose and bent her face toward Ruby's, her mouth open, as if to kiss her like a lover, in a move so sensual and intimate, so terrifying and wrong, so familiar and shocking. This is what you do. Everyone knew this is what you did to save a life. But you didn't see it happen, not in real life, not in someone's backyard, not with your own child, who had just moments before been running about trying to catch the lights. Nothing happened. Erica breathed once more into Ruby's mouth, while Oliver continued to rock and chant. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. And 5. Clementine felt herself rocking in time with him, muttering over and over, "Please, please, 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 please." So this is how it happens, a part of her thought as she rocked and begged. This is what it feels like. You don't change. There is no special protection when you cross that invisible line from your ordinary life to that parallel world where tragedies happen. It happens just like this. You don't become someone else. You're still exactly the same. Everything around you still smells and looks and feels exactly the same. She could still taste Vid's dessert. She could still smell the roast meat from the barbecue. She could hear the dog yapping endlessly, and she could feel a thin line of blood trickling down her shin from where her knees had smacked hard against the pavers.
"Oh, dear God, please, God," Sam moaned.
And he sounded so weak and desperate, and he didn't believe in God. He was an atheist, And his horror was her horror, but she didn't want to know about it. And Clementine thought savagely, "Shut up, Sam, just shut up." She could hear Vid saying, "We have a very little girl here who is not breathing. Do you understand me? She is not breathing. We need you right now. Please send an ambulance right now."
Clementine felt an immense animosity toward him for saying that, as if he was saying something awful about Ruby, as if by saying she wasn't breathing, he was making it so.
"We must be at the top of your list. We must be top priority. If we need to pay extra, that is no problem. We will pay anything."
Did he honestly think he could pay for a faster ambulance? That rich people could arrange for a VIP ambulance service? And 9 and 10 and 11 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 15. Erica bent her head once more. Sam crouched down next to Clementine and took her hand. She grabbed onto it as if he could pull her back to before, as if he could pull her back to just minutes earlier. Hadn't that only just happened? Just then? Just that moment before this moment? Surely she'd only looked away for a minute. It couldn't have been more than a minute.
"The ambulance is on its way," said Vid. "I'll go wait on the street so they know where to go."
"We'll come too," said Tiffany. "You come and help us look out for the ambulance, Holly."
Holly went, without resisting, without looking back, her hand trustingly held in Tiffany's, as if they were going to see another pet. Of course, a minute was enough. Never take your eyes off them. Never look away. It happens so fast. It happens without a sound. All those stories in the news, all those parents, all those mistakes she'd read about. Backyard drownings, unfenced pools, children unsupervised in the bath. Children with stupid, foolish, neglectful parents. Children who died surrounded by so-called responsible adults. And each time she would pretend to be non-judgmental, but really, deep down she was thinking, "Not me. That could never really happen to me." Erica lifted her head from her second breath and her eyes met Clementine's with a look of unutterable despair. Tiny beads of water clung to her eyelashes. Her lips, the lips that had been pressed against Ruby's, were chapped. Oliver's voice didn't change. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. Chapter 49, The Day of the Barbecue. And 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. Erica listened to Oliver count, waiting for her cue. The number 15. Her shirt stuck to her. Her jeans were so cold and clammy against her thighs. Clementine's face looked like a skull. It was like the skin was pulled back too tight. She was an alien version of Clementine, staring at Erica as if she were begging for clemency. Ruby wasn't responding. It wasn't working, even though they were doing it exactly right. 2 rescue breaths after every 15 compressions, but do not stop the compressions. They'd changed the rules since the last time they'd done a first aid course. Now you did non-stop compressions. She knew that was right. She and Oliver had done a refresher first aid course back in March. It was a free course offered through Oliver's work. The managing partner at Oliver's new accounting firm was a passionate advocate for first aid education. He liked to interrupt meetings by pointing at someone and saying, "Sanjeev is having a heart attack." And then, while Sanjeev obligingly pretended to grab his chest, the managing partner would spin in his chair to point out someone else, often an unsuspecting intern. "You there! What do you do?" "Save Sanjeev!" And then he'd count down the time before Sanjeev was dead, and it was too late. The course had been fun. Oliver and Erica were the star students. They'd both done first aid courses before this. Of course they had. They had their bronze medallions, their rescue diving certificates. They were the sort of people who believed in first aid courses, and anyway, no matter the subject, Oliver and Erica had always been star students. Even when the subject wasn't a matter of life and death, they took it as seriously as if it were. Erica could see their teacher now. Paul was a ruddy-faced, heavy-breathing man who looked like a potential heart attack victim himself.
"Got it in one," Paul kept saying to Erica and Oliver with an approving click of his fingers each time they got something right.
15 compressions and 2 rescue breaths. They were doing it right. They were doing it exactly right. They were following the rules, Paul. So why was Ruby just lying there? Why wasn't she responding, Paul? You hateful, stupid, red-faced, finger-clicking man! 13 and 14 and 15 and 1.
"Where is the ambulance?" said Sam. "I can't hear a siren. Why can't I hear a siren?"
Erica pinched Ruby's nostrils together again, bent her head, and exhaled a silent scream of fury into Ruby's body.
"You do as I say, Ruby. You breathe."
It was her mother's voice. Her mother at her most manic and vicious and terrifying. Her mother when she caught Erica trying to throw something out.
"You breathe right this instant, Ruby. How dare you ignore me? You breathe now, right now."
Erica lifted her head. Ruby's chest jolted. Water spewed up from her mouth. Oliver made a high, startled sound of surprise like a dog's whimper and lifted his hands.
"Got it in one," said Paul in Erica's head with a click of his fingers.
And Erica turned Ruby's head to the side, just like they'd done with the rubbery-tasting plastic mannequin, and Ruby vomited more water, over and over, while Clementine sobbed and heaved as if she were being sick too. The long, thin wail of an ambulance pierced Erica's consciousness, as if it had been there all along, and together she and Oliver turned Ruby onto her side into the recovery position, as they'd been taught.
"Good girl," thought Erica.
And she ran her hand gently over Ruby's head, brushing the wet strands of hair from her eyes as she continued to vomit water.
Good girl.
Chapter 50.
Erica?
Erica fidgeted and focused on the rain falling outside Not Pat's window. Was it easing, perhaps? For the first time ever, she was longing for her session with Not Pat to end. Normally she found therapy such a soothing process, like getting a massage, a lovely self-validating massage of her ego. But today, Not Pat was just annoying her. She'd latched onto the subject of Erica's friendship with Clementine like a little rat terrier with a bone. Each time Not Pat said Clementine's name, Erica felt like she was being pinched. Very hard. Look, she was paying for this. She didn't have to put up with it.
"I don't want to talk about Clementine anymore," she snapped. "All righty," said Not Pat in her folksy way,
and she wrote something down on her notepad. Erica had to restrain herself from reaching over and grabbing the notebook from her lap. Did she have a legal right to demand access to Not Pat's notes? she would find out. In the meantime, she distracted NotPat by telling her the story of Ruby's accident.
Oh my goodness me!
NotPat's hand rushed to her mouth. When Erica had finished, NotPat said,
You know, Erica, it's perfectly understandable if your memory of that afternoon feels disjointed. You suffered a shock. It would have been a traumatic event.
I would have thought that would have made my memory clearer, said Erica.
And in fact, there were some parts of her memory that were frighteningly vivid. She could feel the shock of the water around her legs as she leapt into the fountain, the plumes of water drenching her like rain.
Why do you think you're so concerned about your memory of that afternoon? Asked NotPat.
I have this feeling there's something important I've forgotten, said Erica. It almost feels like there's something I've forgotten to do, like when people talk about how they start to get this niggling worry they've left the iron on when they leave the house.
I know that feeling, said NotPat with a wry smile.
But that's my point. I do not know that feeling, said Erica. I'm not that sort of person. I have perfect recall. I never forget anything like that.
She never worried that she'd left the iron on because she knew she'd never do such a thing.
Once, Clementine had left her house with two hot plates on at full strength. The house didn't burn down, she'd said happily, as if it had been a fascinating experiment. Nothing burned at all. Another time, she'd gone out with the front door wide open.
An open invitation to the neighbourhood burglars, said Sam. Come on in, boys, and help yourself to my $300,000 cello. It's just lying here on the bed for you. Great place for it.
Clementine's excuse had been that she was deep in thought.
About your music? Asked Oliver, respectful of her talent. And Clementine had said, No, I was trying to work out why caramello koalas don't taste as good as they once did. I was thinking, has the chocolate changed or have I changed?
Then she and Sam had got into a discussion about caramello koalas, as if it mattered. There had been no consequences for Clementine's negligence. There had never been a consequence for Clementine's negligence until that Sunday afternoon, and Erica had never wished for that.
Just a financial penalty, maybe.
Sunburn. A hangover. Clementine never even got hangovers.
I just need to get it clear in my head, she said to NotPat.
Well, as I said earlier, you could try going back to your next-door neighbour's backyard, if you haven't already done so, and some relaxation exercises might help. You could try some of those self-meditation exercises I've given you in the past. But honestly, Erica, you might be fighting a losing battle when you consider the medication you took that afternoon combined with the alcohol. It's possible you've remembered as much as you ever will remember. It may even be that you're subconsciously protecting yourself, that part of you doesn't want to remember.
You mean I'm repressing it? Erica had said disdainfully. There are actually no empirical studies on the validity of memory repression. In fact, I can send you some links to articles about false memory syndrome, if you like. But at that point, the little timer on NotPat's desk gave its smug little click to indicate the session was over. NotPat jumped up like a jack-in-the-box. She wasn't normally so fast to get to her feet. Maybe she hadn't enjoyed this session much either. Erica hurried out to her car parked in the quiet street outside NotPat's home office and sat for a few minutes with the ignition on, listening to the thunderous rain on her roof and watching her windscreen wipers work feverishly.
Calm down, she said to the windscreen wipers.
Their manic rhythm reminded her of her mother when she got herself into a state over something inconsequential. She didn't want to go back to her mother's house. She'd taken the whole day off work to help her mother, but she didn't think she had the fortitude to manage going there twice in one day. That was too much. Like asking someone to get back into a freezing cold swimming pool and swim 100 laps after they'd already done 100 laps that morning, and now they'd had a shower and were all warm and dry again. She closed her eyes and tried some of the breathing exercises that NotPat had taught her in a previous session. Inhale, hold, exhale. Inhale, hold, exhale. She let the memories spin through her head. The fairy lights in the trees. The smell of cooked marinated meat. The sour taste of too much wine. She saw that face again, that ghastly, featureless face she'd seen in her office yesterday, like a ghoul. She thought suddenly, Harry. It's Harry's face. Grumpy old Harry. Was there something important she needed to do for Harry? No, because of Harry. Something to do with Harry. Don't chase the memory or it will disappear. She'd learned this. Relax. Breathe. Harry's neatly combed white hair. No, that wasn't a memory. That was an image Oliver had put in her mind. Harry's hair, still neatly combed in death. Harry at the letterbox, muttering to himself as he studied an envelope. Barney streaking across the yard. Vid coming out his front door. An obligation, a request, a responsibility, something that Harry needed from her. Shards of broken blue crockery on terracotta tiles. Look up. Look up! She opened her eyes in the fogged-up car and looked up. Nothing to see, except rain. For heaven's sake, she was only thinking about Harry because he died. It was a casebook example of false memory syndrome. If Erica had a weaker personality, a more malleable mind, then an overeager therapist could help her fabricate an entire memory about the barbecue and Harry. Next thing, she'd be convinced that Harry had been there at the barbecue, molesting Ruby, or some such nonsense. She turned the keys in the ignition, indicated, and looked over her shoulder at the traffic. She would try NotPat's idea of returning to the scene of the crime. When she got home, she would ask Vid and Tiffany if she could stand alone in their backyard in the rain for a while. That wouldn't sound odd at all. No, the best thing would be if she went over when she knew they were out. It probably wouldn't help, but it couldn't hurt. Chapter 51. The Day of the Barbecue. The two blue-uniformed paramedics came into the backyard with the absolute authority of conductors walking onto a stage. They didn't run, but they moved fast, with a rigid calmness. It was as though the rest of them weren't grown-ups anymore. It was as though they'd all been playing a game where they'd pretended to be in control of their lives, a game where they'd pretended they had interesting professions and healthy bank accounts and families and backyard barbecues. But now a curtain had been pulled briskly aside and the grown-ups had marched in because rules had been broken. Rules had been very badly broken. The circle of people surrounding Ruby parted automatically so the paramedics could get to her. Ruby mumbled incoherently, terrifyingly. She seemed drowsy and drugged, as if she were coming out of anesthesia. The paramedics moved as if in a choreographed dance they'd done many times before. As they examined Ruby with plastic-gloved hands, the older man asked rapid questions without looking up, confident that the answers would be provided. He spoke in a voice that was fractionally louder and slower than a normal speaking voice, as if he was speaking to children.
What happened here? What's her name? And how old is Ruby?
When was Ruby last seen?
So no one saw her fall? You don't know if she hit her head?
Did she have a pulse when she was pulled from the fountain?
Are you the parents?
He looked briefly up as he asked the last question at Erica and Oliver. A reasonable assumption. They were the ones in wet clothes.
No, said Sam, we are.
He indicated Clementine.
They rescued her, said Clementine.
It seemed important to get this on the record. Our friends.
They did CPR. They got her breathing.
How long did you perform CPR for? Said the paramedic.
It would have been about 5 minutes, said Oliver. He looked at Erica to confirm.
At the most, said Erica. We did 2 rescue breaths for every 15 compressions, said Oliver anxiously.
5 minutes? It wasn't possible, thought Clementine. It had been an unbearably long stretch of time. There was something in Ruby's mouth, a tube in her nose, a mask over her face. She'd been turned into a generic patient. Not their wicked, funny little Ruby.
Have you got any towels? Asked the younger paramedic.
He was using a pair of large serrated scissors to cut a straight line through Ruby's clothes, her tutu, her long-sleeved T-shirt, unpeeling the layers of clothing to reveal Ruby's tiny white chest.
Of course.
Vid hurried inside and returned with a stack of beautifully folded white fluffy towels.
What are you doing?
Asked Sam sharply as the paramedic dried Ruby's body firmly and pressed 2 sticky pads to her chest.
These are defibrillator pads, said the paramedic, in case she arrests again.
We're just preparing for the worst case scenario. It can also give us useful information. Ruby's little arms flailed about.
We're going to sedate her, said the older paramedic. Are there any allergies I need to know about?
None, said Sam. Is she on any medication? What's her medical history?
She's never even had antibiotics, said Clementine.
The paramedic tapped the side of a needle. Clementine saw white dots in front of her eyes.
Watch her,
said the paramedic sharply, and Clementine realized he meant her only when Sam took her arm. Sam had always been the one to take the girls for their injections. Clementine couldn't bear needles.
Head between your knees, said the paramedic.
I'm okay, said Clementine, breathing deeply.
Why are the police here? Asked Sam.
Clementine looked up and saw Vid talking to a very young-looking policewoman with a pert ponytail. She took notes as Vid spoke. What was he saying?
The mother wasn't watching. She was talking to me. She was telling jokes.
Clementine saw that Erica had got up from her position by the fountain next to Ruby without Clementine noticing and moved inside the cabana. She had 2 white towels draped over her shoulders and another on her lap, where Holly now sat, her back to Clementine, her head resting on Erica's shoulder.
It's standard for an event like this, said the paramedic as he continued to treat Ruby. They'll just ask some questions to clarify what happened. We'll also need them to help block off the street for the rescue helicopter.
A helicopter? Said Sam. They're sending a helicopter? Where are they going to land it?
Basically outside the front door, said the paramedic.
He bent over Ruby's arm. Clementine looked away.
You're kidding, said Sam. They land on highways, backyards, tennis courts. This place is perfect. Nice wide cul-de-sac. Underground power lines. They do it all the time.
Huh, said Sam. Yeah, the blades are shorter than on a normal helicopter.
For God's sake, were they having a chatty, masculine conversation about helicopters? Except that Clementine could see that even though Sam sounded like himself, he wasn't really, because he was opening and shutting his fists rapidly and obsessively, over and over, as if he were freezing cold or mad.
But why do they need a helicopter? Said Clementine.
The panic, which had receded a little when she'd seen Ruby's chest move, and even more so when the paramedics arrived, skyrocketed again.
She's okay now, isn't she? She's going to be okay. She's breathing now. Isn't she breathing?
She looked at Sam and saw the dread in his eyes. He was always a step ahead of her when it came to recognizing danger ahead. Glass half empty, she called it. Alert, he called it. Two crass, ugly words came into her head for the first time. Brain damage.
It's pretty standard procedure for a serious pediatric event. There'll be a doctor on board. I expect they'll intubate her and make sure she has stabilized before she goes on the helicopter, said the paramedic.
He looked up at her. His skin had the roughened look of someone who spends a lot of time outdoors. There was a kind of professional weariness in his eyes, like a war veteran who has seen things a civilian could never understand. Your friends did everything right. Chapter 52.
We were all doing it.
Clementine's words hung in the air while she and Sam looked at each other over the mound of Holly's clothes, breathing heavily. Clementine heard the rain lashing Holly's window and wondered if their little house could withstand this weather for much longer. Perhaps the walls would finally soften and sag and collapse.
I know we were all doing it, said Sam, all four of us, acting like idiots, like teenagers. Our behaviour was disgusting. It makes me want to vomit when I think of it.
The extreme violence of his words made Clementine want to leap to their defence. They'd been people at a barbecue having a laugh, flirting, being silly. It had meant nothing. If the girls had kept chasing the fairy lights, then nothing more would have come of it. They would have looked back on that day with laughter, not shame.
It was bad luck, she said. It was very bad luck. It was not, exploded Sam. It was negligence. Our negligence. I should have been watching the girls. I should have known that I couldn't depend on you. What?
Clementine felt a crazy, almost exhilarated feeling of rage and injustice blow straight through her body like a white-hot flame, making her feel as if she could lift off the ground. Finally, after all these weeks, they were going to fight.
It was the one time, he said coldly, the one time I let my attention slip. Yes, maybe I thought I could sit back and relax, said Clementine. Her face shook with fury, because the better parent was there, because Mr. Fucking Perfect was on duty.
Sam gave a bitter half laugh.
Fine then, it was all my fault. Oh, for God's sake, don't be such a martyr, said Clementine. We were both there. We were both equally responsible. This is silly.
They looked at each other with flat dislike. Their different parenting styles had always been a teasing point of contention, a hairline fracture in an otherwise solid marriage. But now, that tiny fracture had become a chasm.
I think I'm done, said Sam. It's a pointless conversation, agreed Clementine.
No, said Sam. I think maybe I'm done with us.
Done with us, repeated Clementine slowly. Was this what gunshot victims meant when they said they initially felt no pain? You're done with us.
I think we should consider separating, said Sam.
Possibly.
I don't know.
Don't you think?
Chapter 53. The Day of the Barbecue. Tiffany stood in her backyard being interviewed by a young police officer. She looked over her shoulder at the paramedics next to the tiny form of Ruby. Sam and Clementine were talking to the paramedics, and they looked like entirely different people from the ones who had been sitting around the table only minutes earlier. Their faces had collapsed, like popped balloons.
What happened here? The policewoman said to Tiffany.
She pointed with her foot at the broken crockery on the pathway leading from the back door. There were dangerous-looking shards and chunks of broken blue china everywhere. Tiffany had loved those blue plates.
Oh, said Tiffany. She tried to imagine this scene through the policewoman's eyes. Did it look like a crime scene? Did she think there had been a fight? Or that they had all been drunk?
The policewoman had already spoken to Vid, so presumably she already knew exactly what had happened. She was double-checking their stories, making sure everything matched up. It made Tiffany nervous.
Our guest, Erica, our next-door neighbour, she was carrying plates from inside, and I think that's when she realised that Ruby was in the fountain.
Tiffany's voice broke. She thought of Ruby's squat little toddler body, her blonde curls.
And then I think she dropped them because she ran to pull her out.
What had Tiffany been doing? She'd been distracting Ruby's parents. She'd made them forget they were parents.
It happened so fast, she told the policewoman.
Unfortunately, it's not an unusual scenario, said the policewoman. Children drown in plain sight, surrounded by people. It's silent. It's fast. Lack of parental supervision is the most common cause of drownings.
Yes, said Tiffany. She wanted to say, no, you don't understand. We're not those kind of people. We were supervising them. Just not then, just not at that moment. It was silent. It was fast. For one moment, they all looked away.
Tiffany thought of her older sisters. She could never tell them about this.
For fuck's sake, Tiffany, they would say,
because the Collins girls took pride in their down-to-earth practicality, their common sense. They were from the western suburbs and proud of it. They didn't make mistakes like that. They'd be distressed that something like this could happen at their own little sister's house. They'd relate it to money, to her bloated bank account. They wouldn't pull their punches. If they ever learned that she'd been pretending to give the child's mother a lap dance at the time it happened, they would be united in their horror. Tiffany's dancing career still mystified and shamed them.
Just thinking about you in that trashy club makes me sick to my stomach.
Her sister Emma, the dramatic one of the family, liked to say all these years later. And she wasn't actually being dramatic. She meant it. It really did make her sick to her stomach.
She was a disgrace to the sisterhood, agreed Louise,
who had recently discovered feminism. And she meant it too. But their words had slid straight off Tiffany as if she were made of Teflon. Their words would stick now. Even if her intentions had never been more innocent,
because the safety of a child trumped everything, as it should. Tiffany looked up as the frantic, dramatic sound of chopping helicopter blades suddenly filled the air.
Is that helicopter for us?
Yep, that's for us. The policewoman looked up too and took a radio out of her trouser pocket. Excuse me. She hurried off.
Where is it going to land?
Said Tiffany to herself. The helicopter hovered over them like a giant bird, and the sound intensified. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw poor Barney streak across the yard to escape the loud noise.
Mum?
Dakota appeared by her side in the backyard, her eyes big and wide. She held her book in her hand, her finger still marking the page.
What happened? Why is there a helicopter here? I heard the ambulance before, but I didn't think it was for us.
Tiffany put her arm around her and pulled her close, wanting to feel her skinny little body for a moment. She had forgotten all about her up until now. Ruby fell in the fountain. She nearly drowned. Dakota immediately pulled away from her hug and grabbed Tiffany's arm. She said something, but Tiffany couldn't hear her over the increasing volume of the helicopter. She saw Vid at the end of the path that led down to the side of the house, gesturing for her to come out the front. He had yet another policeman with him. He wouldn't like that. Vid had a police phobia. One of his greatest, genuine but amusing fears was going to jail for a crime he didn't commit.
Innocent people go to jail every day, he often told Tiffany,
completely straight-faced, as if it were more likely than not that this could happen to him. It made him excessively law-abiding. He'd paid far too much tax until Tiffany had taken over his financial affairs. He still wanted to throw extra money at the tax man, just in case.
Daddy needs me. Go and wait in the house, she yelled at Dakota. Everything is fine.
Dakota grabbed Tiffany's arm again, pinching the flesh too hard. Tiffany shook her off.
Later, she yelled. Go!
Dakota ran off, shoulders rounded, her face in her hands. And Tiffany thought impatiently, "Geez, Louise, Dakota, I don't have time for this. It's not about you." Chapter 54. Tiffany and Vid listened to the rain and stared dully at the crash site on the kitchen floor, created by the dropped jar of chocolate nuts.
"You wouldn't think there'd have been that much glass in that jar," said Vid.
"Or that many nuts," agreed Tiffany.
"We're okay, Dakota," she called out, "just in case you're wondering. Your dad dropped a jar."
There was silence. Tiffany could just make out the hum of the television beneath the rain.
"Nobody is hurt," called out Vid. "We don't need any help."
There was a pause.
"Okay,"
called back Dakota in a magnificently dismissive tone. Tiffany and Vid smiled at each other.
"I should have guessed why she was behaving so strangely," said Tiffany. "It's so obvious to me now that she would blame herself."
"You kept telling me there was something wrong," said Vid. "But why didn't she just tell us how she felt before today?"
He lowered his voice, although there was no chance that Dakota could overhear.
"Why keep it all bottled up like that? That's not good."
"It sounds like she was worried that we blamed her too. She seemed to think we were angry with her."
"Crazy," said Vid angrily.
"I know. Well, we were upset, obviously, and distracted. And that's what children do. They assume they're to blame for everything. So everything we did, she misinterpreted.
But she wasn't even there when it happened.
That's the point. Tiffany tried not to show her impatience. Vid had been there too when Dakota had sobbingly explained exactly why she thought everyone blamed her for Ruby's accident. But he was so busy throwing up his hands in disbelief, he hadn't listened properly to a word she'd said. She got it into her head that Clementine believed Dakota was in charge of the kids. I mean, we did keep telling her she was such a good babysitter.
Yes, but I know, said Tiffany.
Of course Clementine and Sam wouldn't blame her. No one blames her. She's 10 years old, for God's sake. We all knew she'd gone inside to read her book. If anyone was to blame in this family, it was me. I was the one offering lap dances to our guests.
Stop that, said Vid quickly, predictably.
He'd shut down every conversation like this since the barbecue.
It was a terrible accident.
Yeah. Talk about keeping things bottled up. No wonder Dakota thought that what had happened at the barbecue was a shameful secret. They'd never said a word to her about it. That must have seemed so strange and freaky to the poor kid. Of course she thought it was about her. She remembered how the week directly after the barbecue she'd been so preoccupied with work. That bloody townhouse that had been nothing but trouble from the start had got passed in at auction, and the Land and Environment Court decision hadn't gone her way. It had been a shit week all round, and beneath all that stress was the absolute horror of what had happened. She hadn't given Dakota a thought. Not a single thought. Dakota had just been another job to cross off her list. As long as she had her uniform and lunch and was safely deposited at school, then the job was done. Vid had been the same. It had been a shit week for him too. He'd lost that government contract, which had turned out to be a blessing in disguise, but he hadn't known that then. By the time Vid and Tiffany had emerged from their fogs and started talking properly to Dakota again, the damage was done. The poor kid interpreted their re-emergence as her parents forgiving her. Forgiving her?
I'll get the dustpan, said Vid. Don't move. You have bare feet.
He went to get the dustpan and broom. Tiffany watched Vid's massive shoulders as he crouched down, carefully sweeping up the glass and nuts. She thought about secrets and the damage they did. I recognized one of the parents at the